Neil, thank you so much for agreeing to talk about children and bullying. I really the quote that you've used at the beginning of your vlog, at the beginning of your blog for Mind in Mind, saying this, the James Baldwin quote, saying, "Children have never been good at listening to their elders, but they have never failed to imitate them."
Yes. So the question of how we educate children has most to do with our behavior and not what we tell them, with a conscious intent to influence them. So it also shows that our words and our behavior enter the children's minds on more than one channel. And that if the influence is very powerful on a sort of less than conscious level, that may stimulate actually quite a bit of resistance on the conscious or verbal level. So we really need to be paying a lot of attention to how we behave, not only toward our children, but within the awareness of our children.
Mm. So what you're saying is there's a fundamental contradiction between what we're saying to children about what they should do. And you say in the blog that kindness is something that's really being mentioned a lot to children, kindness and compassion. But then when they see what's going on in the outside world, when they look at the television and the news and how politicians are behaving and how we're all behaving towards each other in a very unkind and uncompassionate way, that there is this contradiction that perhaps needs explaining and thinking about with your children.
Right. So one question would be, is there some way to address that contradiction with children at different ages? And the other thing would be to think about how the more unkind behavior that children are exposed to in their elders actually illuminates a fundamental reality that needs to be integrated with the messages that we're giving them about the value of kindness. And that's really where I'm the most interested, because I think if we try to emphasize kindness without taking account of the unkindness all around them, we're really reinforcing a dissociative split within the children, in which unkindness gets split off and becomes more virulent by virtue of not being integrated. And at the same time, if we're emphasizing to children the importance of competition and so on, given that it's a dog-eat-dog world, then we're likewise splitting off the aggression that's necessary to survive from the kindness that is also a human potential.
Professor Paul Gilbert, who founded Compassion Focused Therapy, often says that compassion is a much better description for us to try and aim towards rather than kindness, because sometimes it requires doing the tough thing and being courageous and being strong, whereas kindness perhaps doesn't quite encapsulate that, does it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. Compassion is a better term in that general area, because it has to do with a mental state rather than behavior. And if you're trying to integrate kind behavior with aggressive behavior, it's more of a stretch than it is to think about how a compassionate mental attitude is compatible with a behavior that might bring together in some way force or aggression with a commitment to the well-being of the child.
Yeah, and I suppose I'm sure that, you know, young people are looking at this present situation, what's happening to the planet, what's happening to our society, rising poverty, that maybe they're going to need to be courageously compassionate and to perhaps use some of that aggression, some of that anger that they might be feeling to make change in the world. And that can be done in a compassionate way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also important for people who want to educate children in this integrative way to realize that all of us are subject to unkind behavior and uncompassionate behavior. that it's not that we are trying to stamp out unkind behavior or uncompassionate mental attitudes. It's a matter of how do we do things that reflect what Melanie Klein called reparation? And how do we, when someone slips up and acts in a destructive way, a child in a classroom, let's say, and the child or adolescent does something destructive, how do we address that behavior in a way that doesn't deny our kinship with that person and the fact that we all struggle with these contradictions?
Yeah, and I'm aware also that you're not a great fan of time out for children unless it's done in a reparative way.
Absolutely. And also in a way that really emphasizes time out. It's a very interesting idea, because the basic idea should be that it's a chance for the child to reconnect with a more compassionate, let's say, part of himself or herself. You know, that sometimes it takes time for the passion to subside a little bit and then to reconnect with a different part of the self. But when you're actually putting time out into practice, there's a lot of aggression unleashed around that, where the child is going to be screaming at you, and you sometimes have to resort to physical means to get the child to sit in the timeout chair or to get in that room and allow the door to be closed. And so there's a lot of opportunity for our own aggression as adults to get unleashed in the process of trying to get the child to connect with a more compassionate, less violent part of himself or herself. So this is something that requires training, actually. And there's going to be slip-ups all along the way. Like, I remember one of my first child supervisors was talking about, this was actually in a preschool setting, where the psychologists were consulting to the teachers. And my supervisor said, you've got to watch those hands of the teachers and how they pinch as they pick up the child to try to help him calm down. And of course, now we've all done that. We hold on to the child's arm a little bit too hard.
So what's the way around that, do you think?
Well, I mean, first of all, to think about it in a calm moment and to realize, like what my supervisor did, to say, watch those fingers. And, you know, I guess she might have said, and we've all been in that situation where we're enraged at a child who we're trying to help. So first, to think about it at a calmer moment. And secondly, if we slip up and we do that, we have to acknowledge it to ourselves and then to the child later, not in a way that undermines our authority, but that says, you know, I was really mad at you then. You were mad at me and I was mad at you. And I really feel bad about the fact that I think I grabbed onto you a little bit too hard.
That sounds like some good reparation there.
Preparation.
Yeah. And I'm interested too. I mean, how does a parent or a child worker explain how, you know, politics seems to be getting more and more unkind? There seems to be an increased level of aggression. How do you explain that to children about the adult world?
Yeah. Well, I think it's something that has to be keyed to the age and the developmental level of the child. So with adolescents, I think with adolescents, you can have a more or less adult conversation about some of these things. But with younger children, and especially those who are just coming into awareness of what is going on in the world outside, the first thing is to acknowledge that they already know in some way, but that it's coming in a form or in a modality that isn't the same as the way it infiltrates the minds of adults. So one thing that struck me is that children, especially in New York City, as an example, I'm sure also in London, walk past newsstands all the time with headlines blaring at them. And kids who are, you know, 5, 6 years old, 7 years old, they're starting to read. And so they either read what they're passing, the headlines of the tabloids, or else they're doing something mentally to somehow not notice what they're seeing. And the same thing about television. We turn on the television, and how closely do we track what these kids are actually being exposed to, and how are they processing that in their minds? Or are they processing it consciously at all? So the first thing to do, I think, is to be aware of what the children are exposed to, and then be available to for their comments and their questions about what they see. And it's not an easy thing to do that, because children will kind of stare blankly at these things for a long time before finally, when least expected, they might say something about it. Like recently with my own child, he said out of the blue, why do police kill people? You know, he's 6 years old. Am I going to talk to him about systemic racism in some way? Am I going to talk to him about the predicament of a policeman who walks into a situation not knowing if somebody is going to fire a gun at him or her in the next split second? Do I talk about both of those things? And if so, am I equipped, as much as I've thought about this, to talk about the interface of systemic racism and the way all of us are raised with prejudices, along with the situation of feeling in mortal danger yourself without knowing what you're walking into? So I can't go any further than that. I mean, the best I can think to do is to, and in fact, what I did at that time was to say, sometimes the policeman or woman gets terrified and does things without thinking. And since they have guns, that's a very dangerous situation. So I said something like that. But another time I have to come back and say something about systemic racism. So, you know, one thing is you can't say everything at once. Like you can't give a full picture. And the younger the child, the more that's true. But then you have to keep it in your mind. Now I've got to go back and have another part of that conversation. And at that point, the child's not going to want to hear it. No, why you not? Already told me, you know, enough. So it's a challenge, but we keep trying.
Thanks for your thoughts, Neil. That's really helpful. And looking forward to having your blog on the website. Thanks for your contributions.
Thanks for entertaining me.